Hello, you're listening to The Current. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Many Canadians, most of Alberta and all of Bay Street, are abuzz about the promise of untold wealth in the Alberta oil sands. An estimated 1.7 trillion gooey barrels of oil are locked in the sands, making it the largest reserve outside Saudi Arabia. You can't blame the province for thinking everything's possible, except for maybe contributing to cleaner air and living up to the Kyoto Protocol. Here is Federal Environment Minister Rona Ambrose last Friday discussing whether Canada can meet its obligations to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
No, we can't. My departmental officials and the department officials from Natural Resources have indicated that it is impossible for Canada to reach its Kyoto targets. And let me be clear, I have been engaging with our international counterparts on this issue over the last month. We are not the only country that is finding itself in this situation. We have to start talking about what comes after this. The next step is to start to talk about action and solutions long term. We need solutions that are out by 50, 100 years.
Federal Environment Minister Rona Ambrose. Well, one of the big reasons why Canada cannot meet Kyoto targets happens to be one of the country's most significant economic boons right now, the oil sands in Alberta. In 2003, Alberta accounted for almost one-third of Canada's total greenhouse gas emissions, an estimated 35% of that number coming from the oil and gas sector. So to help us understand this environmental and economic conundrum, I am joined by Matthew Bramley. He is the director of the Climate Change Program at the Pembina Institute for Appropriate Development, and he is in our Ottawa studio this morning. Hello.
Hello.
Now, before we zero in on the oil sands, we just heard that clip from Rona Ambrose that Canada cannot meet Kyoto requirements, and we should be thinking, what, 50 to 100 years in terms of planning. What do you say to how do you react to that?
Well, we don't think it's acceptable to give up before you've really even started to try. And the fact is that Canada has a large range of options that can take us to our Kyoto target, but the federal government has hardly begun to implement those options. Most obvious of those would be a system of mandatory regulated greenhouse gas targets for the large industrial emitters, of course, including oil sands and the oil and gas industry. Large industry makes up close to 50% of our emissions, and those sectors are not yet facing any significant constraints on their emissions. So it's not surprising our emissions have risen rapidly, because we haven't yet really begun to try to reduce them. I think the comments of the minister about 50 or 100 years, you know, when politicians talk in those terms, it sounds very much like an excuse to say, well, we don't really want to have to do anything very significant now. Give me a break, you know, take the pressure off. The fact is that we're never going to succeed in making the deep reductions in greenhouse gas emissions that are needed over the 50-year time frame if we're to prevent dangerous climate change, unless we begin straight away, because, you know, we're continuing to put in place greenhouse gas intensive infrastructure, and the oil sands is a great example of that. And that infrastructure has a lifetime of decades. So yes, this problem is going to take decades to solve, but if we don't begin now preventing some of that infrastructure being put in place, we don't have a chance of solving it 50 years out.
A lot of climate scientists say we really have one or two decades to get on the path toward radically reducing emissions.
Well, I think getting on the path is the key concept there. We have to get on the path right away towards those deep reductions in emissions. I mean, analysis we published at the end of last year shows that industrialized countries like Canada really need to be looking at reducing their greenhouse gas emissions on the order of 80% below the 1990 level by 2050. But to do that, we can't wait really very much longer before starting. We have to start right now.
Well, the minister says it's impossible to meet the targets. Are these targets legally binding?
Well, that's the other point I wanted to make. Kyoto is no longer just a commitment. It's also an obligation now. The Kyoto Protocol is part of international law. That means that if Canada misses its Kyoto target, which applies to the period 2008-2012, we will be in violation of international law. And a government that says we're not even going to try to meet the target is in fact a government that's saying we're deliberately heading for a violation of international law. And I don't think very many Canadians would be comfortable with their government taking that position.
Now let's talk specifically about the oil and gas sector. It's a significant player in the Canadian economy, obviously. Give us a sense of how much the oil and gas industry is driving our greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, the oil and gas industry as a whole is responsible for about 20% of Canada's greenhouse gas emissions. Of those large industrial emitters, it's the single biggest portion. The most worrying aspect is though, that the rate of increase of emissions. So between 1990 and 2003, the upstream oil and gas industry, that's the part of the industry that's mostly concentrated in Western Canada and particularly in Alberta, saw its emissions increase by just about 50% between 1990 and 2003. Canada's overall emissions increased by 24% over that period. So this is one of the biggest contributors to rising emissions in Canada. And in the years from now on, it's the oil sands sector in particular that has tremendous projected emissions increases.
Well, how do the oil sands factor into that?
Well, right now, oil sands are a relatively small portion of Canada's emissions, but those emissions from oil sands are projected to multiply by more than three between 2003 and 2012, the end of the first Kyoto period. And oil sands emissions are projected to multiply by about five between 2003 and 2020. So, you know, during a period when it's really critical for us to be getting on that path towards deep reductions, we're looking at emissions from the oil sands multiplying by very significant factors.
And how is it that the production of the oil sands produces so much greenhouse gas?
Well, extract the first of all, oil sands is a mixture of sand and bitumen, which is a very heavy tar-like substance. First of all, you have to use a lot of energy to separate the bitumen from the tar. Then you have to use more energy and more greenhouse gas emissions to turn the bitumen into what's called synthetic crude. So overall, producing synthetic crude from the oil sands uses about three times more energy and typically three times more greenhouse gas emissions than producing conventional crude oil.
And how worrying is it that the industry is using up Canadian reserves of relatively clean fuel like natural gas to produce what would be considered a dirtier fuel for the export market?
Well, that is a concern. Obviously, the reserves we have of natural gas are far smaller than the reserves of oil in the oil sands, and many people feel that it doesn't make sense to be using a relatively cleaner fossil fuel like natural gas to be doing this. On the other hand, some companies in the oil sands are looking at using dirtier fuels to provide the energy to extract oil sands.
Like
and
what?
That would produce even more greenhouse gas emissions than you get when you use natural gas. So it can cut both
What's
ways.
What's a dirtier too. Fuel?
There are so-called residues, which are residues from upgrading the bitumen to produce the synthetic crude from the oil sands. Those residues can be used. They're a kind of coke or coal-like substance, which, when you use them to produce energy, have far higher greenhouse gas emissions than when you use natural gas. So, if that trend takes off, then we're going to see even more rapid increases in these emissions from oil sands.
What about solar power? What about nuclear power? Is that being discussed?
Well, nuclear is beginning to be discussed, and obviously that raises very big concerns about safety, security, environmental impacts, and cost as well.
Now, in an interview with the San Francisco Chronicle last year, the environment minister of the time, the Liberal environment minister, Stéphane Dion, said the oil sands were a challenge because of the amount of greenhouse gases they produce. But he also said, there was a quote of him saying, no minister of the environment on earth can stop this from going forward because there's too much money in it. To what extent are the oil sands dictating Canada's climate change policy?
Well, there is a lot of money going into the oil sands. A recent statistic was $36 billion of investment over the next 6 years. And as former Minister Dion noted, that is something that a politician finds it difficult to fight against. I think the point to make here is that, you know, we're certainly not advocating that development of the oil sands come to a halt overnight. What we do want to see is Canada move to a truly sustainable energy policy over the longer term. But in the meantime, a way to solve this is to set mandatory targets for greenhouse gases from the oil sands that the sector can meet in part by purchasing so-called offsets or credits. So the idea here is that the sector do as much as it can to meet its targets through technology sort of on-site, and then go the rest of the way to meet targets by essentially paying someone else to reduce their emissions. This is what happens when you buy a greenhouse gas credit.
A lot of people are skeptical of that trade-off thing. You use money, but you don't change anything.
Well, you do change something. If you buy a credit that comes from a good environmental project that really reduces emissions, it could be a project in Canada or it could be a project overseas, then that is helping to fight climate change, because climate change is driven by greenhouse gas emissions wherever they occur in the world. This is a global problem. So it makes absolute environmental sense to be financing emission reduction projects anywhere in the world, as long as they're real projects and they're really reducing emissions. And that's what Kyoto allows you to do. And that's one of the reasons why Canada actually can meet its Kyoto target, because we have that option under Kyoto of financing good environmental projects in other countries if we, you know, find that it's difficult to meet our target purely domestically.
Okay, and now just briefly, the Pemina Institute reported this week that Ottawa is cutting budgets to fight climate change. There are reports today that that back that up. What does that mean, that Ottawa isn't putting enough money into other alternate areas?
Well, if it's confirmed that the overall federal budget that goes to climate change programs is reduced, the CBC reported that a week ago, and if at the same time the government is failing to move to put in place regulations to set targets for these big industrial emitters, and we're seeing no movement there, then what it means is that the overall federal effort on climate change is being reduced just at the time when it needs most to be ramped up. And it would mean that Canada would be simply abandoning Kyoto, and we, you know, and not just abandoning Kyoto, but abandoning really, really meaningful action on climate change. And really, that is not acceptable.
Matthew Bramley, thanks for your thoughts and perspective on this.
Thank you.
Matthew Bramley is the director of the Climate Change Program at the Pembina Institute for Appropriate Development. He was in our Ottawa studio. You're listening to The Current on CBC Radio 1 and on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Well, we did make a request to speak with both the Environment Minister, Rona Ambrose, who is also the chair of the United Nations Framework on Climate Change, as well as her predecessor, Stéphane Dion, but we were told that neither was available at this time. So we are going to get some thoughts from the oil industry itself to see if we're really talking about a choice between the industry and the environment. Rick Heineman is a senior policy advisor on climate change for the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers, and he is at his home in Calgary. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like you to respond first to what you just heard from Matthew Bramley. How much is the oil and gas sector and the oil sands in particular influencing our national climate change policy?
Well, Anna Maria, it's, you know, this is a major policy initiative in the country, we think, and it's important for our sector as it is for other large industry sectors. So we've been engaged, we believe, quite constructively with the governments, federal and mostly Alberta, the provincial level, in thinking about how you can put in place a policy that will drive an effective effort within Canada. And so we've had a lot of discussions with the governments, with other industry sectors, with environmentalists. I've done a lot of work with Matthew in the past, and so it's an important thing for us. And I think we have contributed some, a lot of positive things to the way the Canadian policy was shaping up in the past.
Do you think it is so inevitable that Canada will totally be unable to meet its emission reductions targets under the Kyoto Accord?
Well, you have to understand exactly what's being said. I don't think anybody, even Matthew, believes that Canada could get its emissions within the country down to the level of its Kyoto target. I mean, without a total economic collapse, our emissions are going to be well above that. Everybody, I think, agrees with that. And most of the people who say Canada won't meet its Kyoto targets are talking about our actual emissions versus our target. What Matthew just referred to was that there is this opportunity to go out and buy credits in other countries to cover the gap between your emissions and what the target is. And that's where a lot of the difference comes between different people. One thing is we could put a lot of money into that. We could spend billions of dollars a year buying foreign credits if they were available, because the international system of creating these things is extremely inefficient and clogged up at the moment. But we can, in principle, could go out and buy these foreign credits to cover the gap between where our emissions are going to be in 2008 to 2012 and what our target is. Or, as some of us recommend, it would be more valuable for Canada's contribution to the international effort on climate change to take that money, or whatever money we are going to put into the climate change effort, and use it to improve our technology here, improve our energy efficiency, and get on a path for the future to actually bring down our own emissions.
And that would be technology to make you the actual extraction much more efficient.
Well, not only the oil sands extraction, but yes, that, power generation, conventional oil and gas, other large industry, automobiles, house efficiency, appliances, all of that stuff.
Is some of that underway, though? It seems to be awfully slow.
It does look pretty slow, but some of it's underway. There's a number of initiatives on CO2 capture and storage. that are being done, but it takes time, it takes technology development, and it takes money. And people, we have to, as a country, put more money into the effort to develop more advanced technology that will allow us to use our oil and gas resources, our coal resources, in a way that allows us to capture the CO2 and prevent it from getting up into the atmosphere.
Well, speak to us a little bit, though, about how you strike the balance, then, between what is obviously an economic promise and a boon to the environmental issue. You know, the stats are pretty stark. Again, producing a barrel of crude from the oil sands creates 3 times as much greenhouse gas emission as producing a barrel of conventional crude. The oil industry executives and their grandkids are breathing the same air as the rest of us. How do you look at that and balance it?
Well, there's one important thing to recognize right out of the start, and even though the oil sands are energy intensive and therefore more emission intensive than conventional oil, most of the emissions that come from the use of oil and gas are at the end use. It's you and I. It's coming out the tailpipes of our cars. It's going out the stacks of our houses, factories, and so on. So, sure, oil sands are, say, 3 times as much as intensive as oil and gas, as conventional oil. But the conventional oil emissions out of a total barrel are like 8% of the emissions, where 92% are from the end use. In oil sands, it's a number like about 25% are from the production and upgrading and refining, and then the 75% are from the use. So, sure, we need to work on improving the efficiency of producing the oil sands, finding ways of capturing and storing the CO2, but don't forget that doesn't solve the problem. The real problem is a global problem of having to use hydrocarbons in a way that doesn't allow the CO2 to come out, and that's global, and it's a consumer energy use issue.
Okay, Rick Heinemann, thank you very much for your perspective on this today.
Thank you, Anna Marie.
Rick Heinemann is a senior policy advisor with the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers in Calgary.